You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, as Canada enters week two of the 2025 federal election campaign, we begin our coverage here at CICK News with candidate interviews from the streets of Smithers. Ellis Ross is the Conservative candidate for the riding of Skeena-Bulkey Valley and is making his way across the region to meet with voters and pitch his message. According to the polling aggregator 338 Canada, Ellis Ross has a 97% chance of winning the riding, which could upend 20 years of NDP control of Skeena-Bulkey Valley. Before his campaign stop in Smithers, CICK News and the Tyee's Amanda Follett-Hosgood had a chance to speak with Ellis Ross outside the Smithers Legion.
How's it been going so far?
Good. We're getting good responses here in Telqua and Smithers and Houston and Burns Lake. Yeah, but it's a massive riding. We're trying to get to everybody. Yeah. So it's going to be a struggle getting out to every place.
Yeah. What are you hearing from people? What do you think the big issues are?
Places like here in Smithers, they're worried about the crime. I mean, especially the other day, I just got word that a challenged person got home invaded and beaten up and had to crawl for help.
In Smithers?
Yeah, in Smithers. And everywhere I go, even the smaller communities like Telqua, they're worried about the crime. And that's I came from Terrace. And I brought the Terrace Council down to Victoria to try help the British Columbia government realize you got to come help these towns that are trying to struggle with a crime, which they did.
Are you hearing about tariffs?
What's that?
Are you hearing about tariffs?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's hearing about tariffs.
What are your thoughts on addressing that?
It's something that the United States is doing to bolster their own economy. And I agree with something that Poilievre said a few years ago, we're too dependent on the United States. I think people realize that for a long time. So I agree with Poilievre. We've got to diversify our trade with other countries. But first, we got to apologize to them because we sent Germany away with saying, we don't have LNG for you. We sent Italy away saying, we don't have LNG for you. I mean, our government said there's no business case for LNG. But now Alaska is going to sign a $40 billion LNG agreement with Japan. And so without a doubt, there's a business case. In fact, we got LNG started first in Kitimat, but the United States started later, and they became the largest LNG exporter in the world. It's just that our economy has been stifled and ignored for too long, and now we're finding ourselves in a weaker position.
We have the third largest port in Canada in Prince Rupert.
Yeah.
How do you think, in this context, how do you think we here in the Northwest can position ourselves in this trade war, tariff war, with a place like Prince Rupert?
They are key. I went to tour it there. I've seen all the land they cleared out, and they lowered the grade like 20 feet. And they're talking about exports, imports, and they've actually got the rail actually built into it around their site. It's massive what they're doing. I think that Prince Rupert is key, especially when you consider Vancouver Port is backed up. All the West Coast ports are backed up. The only question I have is, okay, we have an undeveloped port in Stewart. I think that could be key for mineral exports, as well as we have a private port in Kitimat, but that's already basically earmarked for LNG and high as a cedar LNG. But we have, I've been talking about economics for 15 years. I've been talking about international trade for 15 years. Nobody wanted to listen. Now everybody's concerned about the economy that's been stifled for 9 years and how do we fix it. It's a great conversation to be part of finally. And this is what I'm going around telling communities, especially ones suffering, like Houston. I mean, it's time to reinvest and think big and bring back our economies for the sake of our societies and our people who are suffering.
One thing you brought up the other day, April 1st, we're going to see a tanker of LNG come up the channel to kind of prime the system there at LNG Canada.
So yeah.
LNG Canada is getting ready to ship out their first shipment of LNG before the end of this year.
That's right.
So that's happening. where do you sit with the Tsai Lism's LNG port that is proposed and kind of going through the motions right now? And on the same note, with, you know, with this type of issue with tariffs and diversifying economies, would you support a repeal of the tanker ban?
The tanker ban won't affect them because that was mainly set for oil tankers.
Yeah.
But Tsai Lism's LNG is in the same boat that we were in, Haisla, back in 2004. I mean, this is what people don't realize. It was the Haisla people and First Nations from Prince George to Kitimat that actually pushed LNG exports on the provincial government and federal government. I mean, it wasn't the provincial government's idea. It wasn't the federal government's idea. In fact, we had to convince them this was the way to go. And so Nisga is in the same boat right now, and I fully support them, not only in terms of what it's going to do to get their people a better lifestyle and a better future, but also how it's going to benefit Canada and BC. And the tremendous amount of work and opportunity that we provided in Kitimat for all the communities across BC, I think that's what LNG for Nisga is actually proposing, the same thing.
I know you were chief counselor of the Haisla back in the days of the Northern Gateway debate. And obviously subsequently happened was that tanker ban C-48. It doesn't cover LNG, so LNG is on its way. But would you support repealing that tanker ban to, you know, open the door for oil export out of the North Coast?
Well, I thought about that in the context of what was happening at the time. And when they came up with that tanker ban, the two First Nations opposed it was Lac aux Lambs and Nisga, because they felt they hadn't been consulted and accommodated. And this is what I find with these types of governments. When they talk about this stuff, they don't really pay attention to the First Nations that really want economic development to resolve poverty or unemployment. They just go with, well, what seems right for Ottawa or Victoria, for that matter. And that's what I've been trying to change. I've been trying to tell different levels of government and politicians, First Nations are actually mandated to have a seat at the table because of the Haida court case of 2004. And what I find is, more often than not, governments ignore that. And that's what I try to fix. I try to educate politicians, governments, to kind of stick to what government's supposed to be doing on behalf of all of us as Canadians.
I mean, on the same note, there was a lot of support from First Nations and others around the tanker ban. What would you say to that?
There was, but, you know, when you go back to the Haida court case of 2004, I mean, I know it's a kind of a tough question, but there is a clause in the Haida court case that says you have to look at the economic component of rights and title. You have to look at it. And when they came up with that tanker ban, they didn't consider the treaty rights of Nisga, and they didn't consider the Aboriginal rights and title of Lac aux Lambs. They didn't consider it. And First Nation leaders, the ones I've met over the last 15 years, they're all trying to do one thing. They're trying to lift their people out of poverty. And for politicians and governments to ignore that is actually ignoring what has been referred to as Canada's shame. I mean, hopefully we resolve that in Kitimat, and hopefully we resolve that as a first step for pipeline communities along the route from Prince George to Kitimat. But, you know, most of the Aboriginals that I met, they're doing it for their people, for a better future. Kids, grandkids, seven generations down the line.
Is it fair to say then that, you know, oil transportation through the riding wouldn't be off the table as far as you're concerned?
No, I've been watching the conversation, and it's not a simple answer. There's a lot of Aboriginal rights and title that have to be addressed as per Section 35 of the Constitution and the Haida court case. I don't agree with Carney saying that he'd invoke emergency powers to build pipelines. You don't need that. All you got to do is reverse Ottawa's policies. And if you do invoke emergency powers, what does that say about you railroading over Aboriginal rights and title? He hasn't answered that question.
There's that recent letter from a handful of oil companies that were suggesting that. Is that what you're thinking of?
No, I'm just thinking about, like my background is protecting the environment back in 2003, 2004, and then it started protecting the Aboriginal rights and title interests as per the Haida court case. Yeah. So when I see governments overreaching and trying to power grab, saying that's an emergency somehow, I've seen that before, and coming from the Indian Act, I try to warn people. When you give away a bit of your rights to government, be careful. Because once they take a little bit, they'll start taking more. So that's what I'm trying to warn people about that. Because under the Indian Act, everybody will tell you, it's about government control. And that's what a lot of First Nations have been trying to fight against, getting government control out of their communities. So I'm very, very nervous when I see governments claiming that they're going to do something and using emergency powers, when really, It's not an emergency. Just reverse the policies that you put in place that stifled our economy. That's all you got to do.
Thanks, Alice.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Good luck.
You too.
That was the Conservative candidate for the riding of Skeena-Bulkley Valley, Ellis Ross. Also on the program today, we check in with Christian Heritage Party candidate Rod Taylor.
I'm Rod Taylor, national leader of the Christian Heritage Party of Canada and the CHP candidate in Skeena-Bulkley Valley. My wife Elaine and I live in Telkwa, BC.
Okay, great, Rod. Thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News again. We're into a federal election. Once again, something you're well acquainted with. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how long you've been in politics and what the CHP is all about.
All right. Well, my wife and I joined the Christian Heritage Party back in 1987. The party began in 1986. The founding convention was in 1987, and we ran our first candidates in 1988. The party was begun specifically to address some of the issues that we thought the major parties were ignoring. One of those was abortion. Of course, since that time, other issues have come to the surface that are also important ones to us. At that time, there was no such thing as same-sex marriage. We thought it never should have become the law in Canada. It is now, but we would seek to return Canada's definition of marriage to that between one man and one woman. We also are concerned about many other issues. I'm sure we'll get into it during this this campaign, but I first ran for the candidacy, the nomination in Skeena-Bulkley Valley in 1993. I was not elected or chosen to be the candidate at that time, and went back to other things that I was doing. And in 2004, the federal election of 2004, I was selected to be the candidate and ran in that election. I've run in, I believe, 9 federal elections since that time, and 4 provincial ones. And for the same reason, we're just concerned about where the country is going, where the province is going. We want to see respect for life, family, and freedom restored to Canada's parliament.
Rod, one thing I noticed this time around, obviously, we've seen, you know, shifting polls and whatnot very recently, a lot of ire against the former Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau. And now we have, Mark Carney with the Liberals, Pierre Poilievre, obviously with the Conservatives, Jagmeet Singh with the the NDP, and of course the Green Party. But here in the riding, it's usually a toss-up between, you know, the Conservative, the NDP. But I saw in some of your pamphlet that, you're taking target at Pierre Poilievre about some of his stances on abortion, marriage, what he's said in Parliament about those two issues, as well as, that he would withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord as well. But it looks like you're kind of targeting Pierre Poilievre. Why is that?
Well, the reality is that the Liberals and the NDP and some of the other parties, but especially the Liberals and the NDP, are 100% committed to the abortion agenda, to the gender confusion agenda, and to spending money that we don't have. Like Trudeau has doubled the national debt with the support of the NDP. Our local member of parliament supported many of the things that the Liberals have done. So we know where they're at. Like the people that want bigger government, that want the government to spend money it doesn't have, that want more killing of babies and killing of older people, more restrictions on freedom of speech, those people are not going to vote, most of them, for either the Conservatives or for us. So there's a slice of the population, and I think a pretty big slice, that is leaning towards the Conservatives. And some of those people agree with us on the issues. They want to see protection of innocent human life from conception to natural death. They want to see the restoration of traditional marriage between one man and one woman. They want to see freedom of speech and freedom of conscience. But somehow they have been led to believe that that Pierre Poilievre is going to do those things for them, even though he has clearly said he is not. And as far as the Paris Climate Accord, he has said he has no intention to leave the Paris Climate Accord. We would, because we think we want to end the war on carbon. Carbon, as we are saying, carbon dioxide is not pollution, it's plant food. And this whole idea that we need to restrict our use of carbon, our emissions of carbon, is a wrong-headed approach to that. We care about the environment. We just don't think that's one of the things that needs to be done to protect the environment. So we want to point out these things because people are led to believe, and this is a tragedy in our multi-party system, they're led to believe that they only have two choices. Well, in this riding, like you say, it tends to be the NDP and the Conservatives, but the people that are voting here, they know that they're probably either putting Mark Carney or Pierre Poilievre in the driver's seat in Ottawa. And our point is that if you care about the issues that we're speaking about, that the big parties are not speaking about, then vote for what you believe. And so we're just pointing out, like, we're not against Pierre Poilievre as a person, but he's if you're pro-life, he's not pro-life, and people should know that. That's why we point that out. I think those who are with us on those issues are not probably going to vote for NDP or Liberal because their positions are well known.
A couple other points, you know, that you have there on a bit of your platform. Obviously, we have issues with housing, you know, food security. But you point out a couple of things, you know, that the housing issue and heating and transportation, taking a target of the carbon tax. Obviously, at this point, the carbon tax, consumer carbon tax, has been lifted. There's still an industrial one in place. And then also, you know, pointing out with the housing issues, trying to make things more affordable by restricting foreign purchases. Currently, we don't have any foreign purchases of residential buildings, residential homes for the last number of years. It's been extended until 2027. How are you trying to, you know, gel with these issues and talk to constituents about these issues where it seems like they're kind of, you know, not top of the mind of a lot of people now that we don't have the consumer carbon tax and also, you know, there aren't really many foreign purchases of houses going on?
Well, they're kind of two separate topics, but the carbon tax, I mean, if Mark Carney becomes prime minister, God forbid, we will be paying the same amount or more in carbon tax, but we'll just be paying it as consumers of the industrial, you know, industrial landscape, like, because that tax is going to be passed on to consumers. There's no way to avoid that. If you're going to tax producers, manufacturers, transportation people, and even oil and gas producers, the consumer is going to be paying that. They're not going to avoid that. And with Mr. Poilievre, of course, he has other things. He says he's going to get rid of all the carbon tax. We stand with him on that. Axe the tax, a great slogan. And if you're going to axe the tax on industrial producers, that's fine too. But he's still talking about things like sequestration. He's still acting as if carbon is something we need to be concerned about, carbon dioxide. We say, no, it's not carbon dioxide, it's not pollution, it's plant food. One of our points regarding housing affordability is we have brought millions of people into this country in recent years. They all need a place to live. And our housing market, our housing industry has not been able to keep up with the demand. So where the prices are driven up strictly by that. And that goes for healthcare as well. We have brought in more people than our healthcare system can handle. So that's why we are saying we need to drastically slow down our immigration, our refugee program, our foreign student program, all those things that bring in more people that need a place to live. We don't have places for them. When there's a shortage of demand, that raises the price of everything. That's one of the reasons that housing prices have gone through the roof, along with the carbon taxes that have added. For new houses being built, every part of that house, everything that travels by truck, is paying a carbon tax. That's part of the reason why housing prices have gone up as well. there has been a tremendous amount of purchase of businesses and farmland by foreign investors, and some of the housing prices in Vancouver, we're told by Sam Cooper, who studied a lot of the fentanyl crisis and the some of the border problems that we have, our ports and borders, says that housing prices in Vancouver and you know, other building prices, a lot of that has gone up because of the funneling of basically the handling of casino money and fentanyl trade money, a lot of it coming from China, and it has been fed into the housing market there, and that's part of the reason why it has jumped up so high.
Okay, Rod, that seems to be all the time that we got this time round, but thanks so much for your insight, and I'm sure we'll see you out there.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks for the call, and I appreciate your reaching out to hear what we have to say.
That was the Christian Heritage Party candidate for Skeena-Buckley Valley, Rod Taylor. Stay tuned for more 2025 federal election coverage here on CICK News. Next week, we will have the Liberal, NDP, and Green candidate to hear how their campaigns are going as we get closer to Election Day on April 28th. Between now and then, there will be advanced polling, and you can always go down to the Elections Canada office and vote in person any day of the week. Stay tuned for more election coverage here on CICK News.